Video surveillance cameras are common on ATM machines and above buildings. Government agencies and private corporations install them to safeguard property and protect people. Such cameras were widely used before September 11th, but with greater concern about preventing terrorist attacks, expanded video surveillance raises new questions about the boundaries of constitutional privacy. In the second of two reports on video surveillance, NPR's Margot Adler brings us a debate on the limits of privacy.
Authorities are increasingly using video surveillance and face recognition technology to combat crime and terrorism. Some see this increased monitoring as necessary in a dangerous world. Others believe that a society that allows routine government surveillance of individuals is Orwellian. Mark Rotenberg is director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. He believes video surveillance infringes on our right to privacy. Robert Castelli is a 22-year New York State Police veteran and security consultant. He promotes video surveillance as an essential law enforcement tool. These two men recently debated these issues before a live audience on the NPR program Justice Talking. I moderated the discussion.
Robert, if government is monitoring us everywhere we go, in airports, stadiums, schools, parks, public transportation, isn't that the definition of a police state?
Well, there is a fine line between anarchy and a police state. And obviously, to protect the public trust, the people in law enforcement need to be allowed to do their job. Having said that, law enforcement officers in the United States are granted by we the people a higher level of authority, and that begets both a higher level of responsibility and a higher level of accountability. And as such, the Supreme Court has been very clear in reining in abuses of law enforcement, and most of us are very sensitive to those needs. But one can't operate under the presumption that all people in law enforcement will err, that all people in law enforcement wish to do harm to the citizenry. I would argue quite differently that under the 14th Amendment, when we talk about due process, that there is an affirmative responsibility of law enforcement to protect the public trust and protect our citizens, the life, health, and safety of our citizens. Our law enforcement needs all the tools that are available to do so, mindful of the fact that none of these threats require us to suspend the constitutional rights that we all have and we all love.
Mark, let's talk for a moment about the post-911 reality. Let's say Logan Airport had a video surveillance system hooked up to a face recognition database with pictures of all known international terrorists. Along come the hijackers on September 11th. They're arrested before ever getting on the plane, and the World Trade Center still stands. What does that scenario do to your argument?
Well, I think that's a lovely scenario for an industry that's marketing face recognition technology, but there's very little from the evidence of how these systems are deployed that makes that scenario at all likely. The problem relating to the entry of the people into the United States who participated in the September 11th tragedy had to do with inadequate data sharing arrangements between federal agencies.
So you're saying that not a single member of Al-Qaeda would have been caught?
That's correct. And I want to make a further point on this, by the way, because it is frequently the case that the advocates for face recognition technology say it is only the pictures of the terrorists that are going to end up in these data databases, but of course that has not been the experience. When Tampa, for example, used face recognition technology at the Super Bowl, they had pictures of local criminals. The same thing for the Oakland airport. I predict today that the most likely digital images to end up in the databases of face recognition technology used at airports in the United States will be the digitized images on photographs from drivers in the United States. That is the easiest data to get, and that's what we're going to be using in the future.
Mark mentioned the Super Bowl. Florida Stadium was filled with cameras scanning the crowd, and as I understand it, mostly the cops wound up finding a bunch of deadbeat dads. Do you think that the effectiveness of this technology is being exaggerated?
Well, I don't think the effectiveness of it has been exaggerated, but I think the potential for its harm perhaps may be exaggerated. And when one goes to a public stadium such as the Super Bowl, where the Goodyear blimp is flying overhead, every TV station in the Western world is photographing the event, I think it would be somewhat ludicrous to think that we expect to be considered private while sitting there on the 50-yard line. If one didn't expect to be seen in public that day, then one should have gone out in disguise.
Coming back to this privacy in public places, it is true that people can be recognized in public places or recorded on a video camera, but it is not so clear that they can be identified. And when we're talking about face recognition technology, we're talking about a means of trying to identify people so that when they walk down a street, whether or not they're engaging in any type of criminal conduct, this technology, if it were to work, would make possible identifying that person at a point in time and space. And I think that's enormously Orwellian, far more intrusive than what most people think about when they imagine a video camera over a countertop at a 7-Eleven or a bank teller inside a bank.
See, may I just take issue with that? It's my supposition that that is no more intrusive than a police officer walking down a street and recognizing an individual whose face he just saw hanging on a poster in the post office. No individual, I submit, had any of their rights or privileges infringed by virtue of sitting in a public place under the public scrutiny of 50,000 or more people, and the only individuals who were subjected to any type of police scrutiny and or arrest were those who had warrants outstanding against them. And that was, in effect, not only the right, but the responsibility of the police to serve the public trust by arresting our criminals.
Many cities have installed cameras to watch drivers who run red lights. Instead of pulling lawbreakers over, the city just mails people a traffic ticket with a photo of their car and the license plate, and them caught in the act. Isn't this an efficient, safe, and appropriate law enforcement strategy as well as a good source of revenue?
Well, it's also a strategy that has raised serious due process protections. And of course, any time that the government levies a fine against someone, people do have the right to challenge how that information was generated to make sure that the machine operated properly. It can't be the case that we have sort of, you know, automated justice. I think with a lot of these technologies, we need to proceed with a certain amount of skepticism. This is not to say that technology doesn't have a role to play in law enforcement. It has a very important role to play. But I think as we make use of technology, we cannot leave constitutional safeguards behind.
Do you think that signs should be posted warning people in public places that they are being watched or videotaped? Robert first.
When people realize that they might be recognized, it has a certain deterrent effect. And the argument, of course, is always displacement. You put a camera here, the crime moves to there. But the fact that one understands you might be under video surveillance causes one to not violate the law.
Mark?
Well, I'm very uncomfortable with signs in public places telling people that they're being watched. I think it is itself a sign of a type of society that we would not choose to live in. I mean, the thought that in a public space you can't share a moment with someone else without being observed, I think is very unsettling.
Mark Rotenberg, director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, and Robert Castelli, a security consultant and professor at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Their debate was recorded for Justice Talking, NPR's weekly program about the U.S. Constitution. It was edited for this broadcast. I'm Margot Adler.